Blog Talk Radio.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious sh-
I'll be honest with you. I am bad news. I'm not your friend. I'm not gonna help you. I'm gonna break you. Any questions?
And that, of course, is how I lost my job at the bank. Because I used to greet people like that. No. That, of course, is a movie that's definitely gonna be talked to. We're gonna talk to a movie. Talked about quite a bit tonight. That's Zero Dark Thirty. I kind of wish I had realized the awesomeness of that clip previously, because I would have found a way to work it into the beginning of our show.
Well, you know what the irony is? We're not even allowed to review it officially.
Yeah.
Since the movie has not actually come out here in DC yet, we're still under embargo. But that hasn't stopped. Well, let's put it this way: a lot of our colleagues have been scared to death of reviewing the film. Mm. I think I've reviewed the film about 4 times already. Just not in a written form.
Yeah.
Like, it's been in my top 10 list a couple of times already. I reviewed it for Around Town. I mean, and it's going to get mentioned again here today. So, embargoes are not silly, but people's fear of them is kind of funny to me. But,
I'll be honest, there was for those that don't hang out in the circles of me and Travis, there's been a lot of hubbub about that. And I always thought it was silly when people started bitching and moaning about embargoes. But I do realize that it's, if your product that you're selling, talking about this movie, is not as valuable when everybody else can sell it the week prior, they kind of conduct this stuff sometimes like it's still 1973, and if you don't get that paper, you won't see it. But
no,
I understand. It's a little crazy. That's going to be in my most disappointing moments of 2012, Zero Dark Thirty. Not movie, but the fact that I didn't take off work to go to the daytime screening they had, because I'm the outside of that one.
Well, in case you haven't figured it out by now, this is our end-of-the-year wrap-up show. We're going to be talking about our favorite movies of 2012. Also, probably our picks for the worst film and the most disappointing film of the year, which is, to me, is very different than the worst film of the year.
I had a fourth quarter game changer on that one, as a matter of fact.
Oh God, really?
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Last part of the year, I mean, in the fourth quarter, the fiscal quarter, Travis. Not basketball. I'm not a sports guy. No.
Yeah. No. Now I have a feeling like I know what the movie might be, but I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything. But we're going to be.
But we just talked to everybody yesterday, so it feels like it's only been 24 hours. Indeed, it has. Only 24 hours. Thanks for joining us again for our top of the year, as Travis was saying. What are we going to be telling everybody about that they should be listening to us for?
First of all, we're going to be joined by a couple of our guests. Our good friend Nell Minow, a.k.a. the Movie Mom from BeliefNet, she's going to be joining us. Yeah, and I'm going to ask her specifically about family movies for this year and to get her opinion on how they were. But we'll be joined by her. And we're also going to be joined by Leslie Combermail, who I'm pretty sure I just butchered her last name. I hope I didn't. AKA the Cinema Siren. She's never been on our show before. She's not necessarily new around D.C., but I think this is the first year she's been around D.C. as a critic. So she's going to be calling in and joining us in just a few minutes as well. So we wanted to have some female perspectives this time around, since Rocky decided to blow us off this week for some family thing or some holiday thing or some boyfriend thing. I don't know what that was.
Yeah. She said, "John Travis, our listeners suck. I'm not coming and talking to them and wasting my time." And I said, "Rocky, that's not right to say." Rocky.
She actually said that there was some other guy that was more important than us, than the two of us, which is just absurd. I don't buy that for a second.
No, not a chance.
No way. There's no way.
Oh, man. And just for that, what you were just saying right there, I got to hit it off with the...
You, sir, are a liar.
Lawyer, lawyer, your pants are on fire!
You know, I didn't work in a lot of sound yesterday, so I'm going to have to find a way to work in this whole soundboard before the end of the show tonight. No, I'm just kidding. I can do that, too.
No,
I
would please don't. Do that. Please don't do that. Well, you know, I just heard that in a trailer for another movie, and I can't think what it was. It was Turbo. It was Turbo, the animated movie.
Right.
DreamWorks. I think that was where I just heard that music again. And I was like, as usual, this music can make any movie seem awesome. Because otherwise, Turbo looks really generic to me.
Dude, I'm telling you, I told you what I did when the song first came out. I put it on my iPod, and I started playing in the morning while I was getting ready, and I thought I was, like, the most awesomest man in the world. And then I went outside, and people told me I wasn't. But until that point, I thought I was the shiznit, as they say.
Right.
But one thing I can't wait to talk about, because I was surprised. I'm glad you actually said the last thing we'll be talking about today is our breakout actors and actresses or roles of the year. And you mentioned when we're going over what we're going to talk about, you had said, you know, actors or actresses instead of just, you know, pick your best breakout. And I'm so glad you did that, because I did not realize how tough that was going to be for me until I sat down and started to live. There's been a lot of, like, you know, really coming out parties for these awesome actors and actresses in some roles that are really putting them out in the spotlight and letting them shine for what they are. People that have been around for a while or people that have already famous in case my list that you just see another side of that you see more of.
That was the thing for me was actors and actresses who have been around and I've seen them do things plenty of times. And they kind of fall into like we talk about the Michael Cera rut, where you're just kind of doing the same crap all the time. And then they'd have that one role where they just kind of, like, something else clicks for them and you see their career take off in a totally different direction. I would say that if this was like a year ago, I'd be saying, you know, Bradley Cooper was that guy. And he's kind of kept that trend going.
He's not really breaking out of his stereotype until next year with Now You See It. Because in Facebook, he was still kind of the nerdy guy, but he broke himself apart from Michael Cera, at least, to tie everything together.
Right. So this year I had a few to choose from that fell into that category. Darn you, Green Bay Packers. Sorry, they got the game on over my shoulder. I need the Packers to win for my Bears to make the playoffs, and they're playing like they just got off that Minnesota Vikings sex boat.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, they're playing pretty bad right now. It's tied, and it really should be.
A lot of bow-legged running.
but going back to what I was saying, I did manage to come up with one that was, I think, is the breakthrough performance of the year for me, the one that really surprised me. So we're going to talk about that. And I see Nell is in the chat room. She'll probably be calling in just a moment here, and Leslie should be calling in just a moment as well. So I'm looking forward to this. I always look forward to this time of year. I look forward to our half of the year show where we do our best of the year so far. I'm somebody who used to rank music and comics and all these things back when I was a kid up until I was a teenager. I love ranking things. It's fun to me. This time of year is fun. I look forward to this. So.
Oh, yeah.
It's tough, to just have three. Normally we would do five, but it always takes so long. You know, always do five, but three is fine. And we're going to do a couple
of five, those. Inevitably, 90% of us have two or three movies that are all rattling around the same ones. And just get a little variation to it. And but, you know, it's funny you say you love ranking things in the year. I hate ranking things, but I love doing this because I can never – like, I always convince myself that my ranking's wrong and I have to redo it and change it over. But, this is how nostalgic our society has become. Like, I'm nostalgic about the year. Like, I'm looking back at the January movies, like, oh, yeah, I remember I got Twizzlers at that screening or something like that, you know? And so it's a lot of fun for us. And hopefully we can tell you guys a couple of things that maybe you didn't catch in the theaters that you can catch up on now. Because there's a lot of big, good surprises out there that I think a lot of people will be surprised by. Like, even 10 years. Which is not going to be on anybody's list, but you know, I was surprised by the number of casual moviegoers that have seen this movie since it came video on demand and have really, really enjoyed it.
Which movie?
10 Years.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, 10 Years is 10 Years is a movie I enjoyed a lot. I think I'm not sure if we talked about it on the show or not, but
because I would have definitely talked about best work in of "I wrote this song for you" I've ever seen in a movie. Loved it.
I pretty much like everybody in that movie, and it's fun to see all those people together in a story that, you know, we've seen a million times. We know that story inside and out, but you don't usually get to see an ensemble quite that talented, and it just kind of had that feel of people hanging out, and, you know, like, I imagine that it took, like, a day to shoot that movie. And it was just Anthony Mackie got to be cool on set, and Channing Tatum got to be Channing Tatum, hang out with his wife. You know, it just seemed like a really fun film to shoot, and you could tell they were enjoying themselves. But before we go off on 10 years, I believe both of our guests have called in. Let's see who this is. Hey, who's this?
This is Nell.
Hey, Nell. How are you doing?
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, this is Nell Minow, a.k.a. the Movie Mom, who we've had you were on our show for the mid-year.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, so we've had you on twice in a year. I think that's awesome. We've had you on twice.
Yeah, whenever we do our ranking.
Only twice, I think, is the way I would put it.
Well, we don't rarely have guests on very often. Like, the only one who comes in all the time is Tim, and half of that time he's uninvited. So, that you were invited twice, I think, is great.
We'd love to have you all the time. You know that.
Terrific. Yeah. Well, I'm happy to be on any time you invite me, and I'm particularly happy to be on this very important show.
Thank you. And I believe this should be Leslie. How you doing, Leslie?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Nell.
Hello, Leslie. Bonjour.
I'm so happy to be with you guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Awesome to have you on. I don't know who said bonjour, but whenever I hear bonjour, I immediately start singing the Beauty and the Beast song in my head. Going on now, just so everybody's aware.
Leslie, I was afraid that I butchered your last name earlier.
Oh,
so.
I didn't even hear you try it. But that's why people go for years not knowing my last name. it's Combemal.
Oh, I never would have. I couldn't say it quite the way you did it.
James Bond.
I sounded it out like a first grader would, because that's the way I get through everything. So
it means bad hill in old French, because we killed the people who came onto our property.
Oh,
well,
all right.
All right.
That's a conversation we'll have to have later
like
on.
So before we get into the list, did you guys have, as we were talking before you guys came on air about, you know, what it's like to, you know, we're making hundreds of lists, the same list, but we're saying it over and over again this time of year. And, you know, whenever we put little different stuff, like we have the breakout roles or disappointing movies, I always find myself, like, thinking I know what it's a lock, and then I go to do it, and I'm like, wait a second, this, you know, is it, for you guys, this time of year, is it easy? Do you already know going into it, or do you have to really analyze everything that you've seen?
Now you take it first. Go ahead.
You know, I'm not sure if Leslie will agree with me on this, but Travis was just saying about how much he enjoys ranking and everything this time of year. That's a guy thing. I only discovered yesterday that I posted a top 10 list that not only is not individually ranked, but I forgot there are only 9 on there. And I do not take it that seriously. What was a lot more fun for me this year was the stuff around my list. I did the same sort of ho-hum list. I always try to have at least one movie on there that nobody else has that I just want to call a little attention to. But I had a lot of fun this year writing about movies that were not on my list but had something special about them that I thought was fun to talk about. And, of course, it's always satisfying to write about the worst.
Oh, yeah.
Know, that's like the one list I never do. I don't know if I've ever done that worst of the year list. I don't think I did it last year. I know I didn't do it this year. I don't get that much enjoyment out of it. I don't know why.
I was just writing about this morning. It'll be up on my blog later this week. Roger Ebert has just published his third volume of movies that he hates. And, you know, one of them is called Your Movie Sucks. One of them is called I Hated That Movie. This one has got a longer title that is taken from his review of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, which he really hated.
The Fiona Apple title for one of his books, I guess, the really, really long one.
Yeah, the really long one. So, exactly. So, it's very satisfying to kind of get your resentment out, and it's very cathartic to explain why a movie's bad. And when we get to that part of the discussion tonight, I'm really excited to talk about why I didn't like the movies I didn't like.
Okay.
I don't like writing lists of movies I hate. In fact, we've had the conversation before, you and I, Travis, about the fact that I try not to write reviews. Since I only have to write one a week, I only write reviews for movies I either really think people have to avoid like the plague or that I actually really, really love. So if I see two or three movies and two of them I sort of just okay like, I'm only going to write the review for the one I think is amazing, because my audience, you know, which is a lot of patch sites around the Washington area, they tend to want to be told what movies they really have to go make an effort to see. It's very expensive to go see the movies, so they don't want to hear about, you know, this one sucks, you know, it's okay, but although every once in a while there's just a movie you have to kind of pick a little bit apart.
Right.
What were you going to say? Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, John and I, we had a show yesterday because we had so many reviews to catch up on, and I talked about my worst movie of the year yesterday, and John was not fortunate, but nice enough to mute his microphone and just kind of let me go off on a tangent. and that's the way I tend to do things better when it comes to talking about my least favorite movies. I'd rather just go off on a verbal tangent than sit there and write about it.
Yeah, I'd rather when you do it like that.
You know, yeah. I know, but I did end up writing a review of this movie, which was basically a rant. But I prefer to talk about it rather than list them. and you know, anyway, let's jump into this because we got a lot of movies to talk about, and everybody's going to do their top threes. We usually start off going around in a circle, and I think we'll do that again this year. I'll start with my number three movie, and then we'll kind of work our way around to Nell, Leslie, and then John. You can finish up the circle. So my number three favorite movie of the year. Where did it go? Now I just kind of lost it. I just lost my list here, and I couldn't remember what my top three movies were.
You want me to take
points?
You can go last?
Nope, I got it. Nope. I had a brain fart, and I remember what it is. I don't need my list. My number three movie is The Master. Paul Thomas Anderson's kind of Scientology film, starring Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman. I don't think there was a movie quite like this all year. I thought Joaquin Phoenix, I felt for him to be far superior to Daniel Day-Lewis in terms of acting. He just so embodied this totally unique character, this damaged individual, who kind of has his world thrown totally in disarray by this charismatic figure played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. I absolutely adored this movie from beginning to end. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea. It's a little awkward. It has a weird sort of momentum to it, but I really enjoyed The Master a lot. I don't feel like it's getting the credit it deserves this Oscar season, but The Master is my number three. Now, let's go to you for your number three.
Well, they're all kind of tied for first place, so I'm just going to start by talking about the movie that I think I enjoyed the most this year that was just pure...
I know you don't like to rank yours officially. You like to do them
And I watched it again last night, and I loved it again. And that's Argo. I thought Argo just succeeded in every category. It was smart. It had a good story to tell. It told that story very, very well. I thought the balance between what was going on in Los Angeles and what was going on in Iran was just impeccably handled. Beautiful performances and just great music. Everything just A-plus all around for Argo.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, Ben Affleck's ability to keep tension in his scenes, he should be getting a kickback from Xanax at some point this year.
They survived, and yet you're still freaked out.
And that's the biggest trick of all is when you know what's going to happen, but still, you're kind of wondering. He did a great job. I agree with that one wholeheartedly.
Is Ben Affleck going to be that guy who's always an also-ran? You know, he's gonna be that guy who puts out great movies, and there's always going to be something else that's just a little bit better.
I worry about that.
I don't think so. I think he's going to be one of those guys that sort of winds up building up and building up, and then, you know, we have to break down our memory. I mean, I don't, but a lot of moviegoers have to break down the memory of some of the really bad stuff he did in the past. And once they really let that go, I think he's going to wind up with an Oscar at some point.
Yeah,
you're right.
I believe it.
And the poor guy, I hope he does, because even the Oscar he got for Good Will Hunting, people kind of took it away from him after he did all those crappy movies afterwards. You're like, oh, he must have just been the dumb guy, and Matt Damon wrote the whole thing or something like that.
it's been interesting to watch his career, how it's kind of gone up and down, and now it's on such an amazing upswing. I wonder, even though he's got a couple of movies, acting roles lined up, I'm curious to see how he's going to divide his time in the future, especially with people talking about possible political aspirations for him in the future. I know he turned down this latest one in Massachusetts, but I still see politics in his future somewhere. So I'm curious.
He can't stay behind the camera his entire career. He's just too marble cut Hollywood leading man, or you know, even political leading man. Presidential face type deal to stay behind the camera the whole time. Yes,
well,
I'm calling him pretty.
I talked to Kathleen Stafford, who was one of those six people who survived the Argo, the Argo event and the hostage situation. And she was talking to me about Ben Affleck, and she was commenting on how smart and insightful and worldly he is. And she wouldn't be surprised if he gets into politics either. And I agree with her on that. So. Leslie, let's hear your number three.
Well, now, you know, I had told you before that I haven't seen some of these movies that I still need to see before award time because, as you all know, I'm not yet a member of that Washington area's movie reviewer thingy-ma-ma.
That thing. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, oh, next year, so that I can have screeners for everything. So there are a couple of movies, one of which there's actually two movies I think are going to wind up at the top of my list, but so I haven't seen them. So instead, I feel like I need to stand for the world of animation because of my alter, my other thing that I do in my world. Yeah, exactly. That's my real person. Cinema Siren's my alter ego that writes movie reviews, but I also own an art gallery that sells art, animation. So, Frankenweenie. I'm going to put Frankenweenie on my list. And I am like Nell. I don't have a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Mm-hmm. There's too many movies I love. And then you start having to break things down according to, I mean, how can you compare something like Argo and Frankenweenie, and then, you know, you've got comedies and you've got suspense, and, you know, plus you have movies that are like these independent flicks that are intense and really hard to watch, and it's difficult to when you start looking at all those, ranking them becomes really difficult because they're so different. You've got your favorite animation and your favorite comedy and all that. So anyway, Frankenweenie, because I know how much that required in terms of number of people involved in the making of it and the history of the original movie and then being turned into stop motion. And, you know, Tim Burton is kind of, he's not always great as far as I'm concerned. He has a very stylistic, very interesting kind of aesthetic, very stylized, very specific to his design, and some people always hate his work, some people always love it. I just think this movie was so beautiful, and knowing what I know about what was involved in the making of the movie and the storyline, and it's so sweet, I think they probably didn't market it that well because, as Nell and I remember, because I think we were sitting next to each other, there was a little girl who just cried and cried because... Because it's not a big spoiler to say, because he is a Frankenweenie, that the dog dies. And so if you're an animal lover, you know, you kind of need to know, if you're taking your kids to this movie, the dog dies, people, so don't bring your tiny kids to it.
And there's some very scary and disturbing stuff.
It's some scary stuff.
It's a Tim Burton movie.
And it's not, I mean, and that's, I think, what one of the things I love about it, if they had marketed it correctly, I think it would have done so much better, because the movie is so beautiful and so quirky, and the characters are, you know, it's very much like Nightmare Before Christmas in that the characters, there's so many little secondary characters. I love the little girl that's
Oh, that ethereal girl? Little girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, the little scary blonde girl. I even bought a T-shirt of her, and her little.
I just got to interview Atticus Schaefer, who plays Igor. Edgar.
Oh,
Gore.
That must have been great.
He was adorable. He was so much fun to talk to.
Yeah,
I just burnout. You know, because we had just seen Paranorman just a few weeks before that. Do you feel like there was
Hotel Transylvania?
And Hotel Transylvania. Do you feel like there was burnout for audiences, which is why the movie didn't perform so well?
I think it was bad marketing, because I think it isn't a children's movie.
Mm.
I just don't think it is. I mean, you know, whereas Paranorman, you know, a little child, you know, say an 8-year-old really appreciate Paranorman. It's a beautiful movie, and I love that movie too. But for me, Frankenweenie, with it being black and white, which I don't think all kids are going to really understand and appreciate, and then it's got some very scary scenes in it, and the dog dies. I just don't think that it's a movie that was marketed the way it should have. Would it have done well had they tried to market it to adults? I'm not sure, because I think some adults really have a lot of resistance to seeing a piece of animation and believing it to be, you know, adult fare. So I think it was kind of didn't have a whole lot of a chance in the first place. But it is on my top 10 because I think it's a beautiful movie. And I think in the long term, and one of the things I did with my list is I chose movies I thought were probably going to, you know, stand up to the test of time, and they were going to be movies that people continue to watch and kind of become movies that are people's favorites long term. And so that's why I put that on my list.
Okay. John, what's first up for you?
Well, I don't want to say mine. I'll have somebody else say mine. There we go.
Really?
Number three for me. Yeah, really. Because
you played that clip. I'm not knocking the pick.
I edited it up and I made it say like just that part and I took out the lip. Yeah, that's me. It's gonna happen again later. I'm not saying. Like, 21 or now. But that's my number three pick of the year. You guys were saying earlier, you know, how do you rank these? You know, and I usually end up looking kind of silly on these shows with all of my learned friends who know, look at all these bourgeois movies.
Bourgeois, then I think you're probably in the, you know, the same category as the learned friends. But okay,
you're blowing my cover.
Don't blame us if you pick Bloodsport 8 to be in your your number two movie.
Excuse me, sir. Bloodsport only and nothing else after that. Same with Kickboxer. Sequels are horrible. But no, 21 Jump Street is a movie that it doesn't teach us life lessons, but it really takes you away from whatever bad things might be going on in your life, whatever stresses you might have, and you just get to really laugh.
I watched it again today on cable. I love it.
It's
hilarious.
I
think it's hilarious too. I would kind of disagree.
Love Channing Tatum.
I think it's one of the smartest high school movies I've seen in a long time. I mean, I would disagree about saying it doesn't teach you anything. I think it has a lot more to say about the way kids have changed over the last 2 years than a lot of movies. It's brilliant the way they did it.
Fantastic. I love that movie. I think it is so smart. It is so funny. It is so well done. It's a terrific movie. And God bless Johnny Depp.
Surprise. Don't you? I mean, I don't know about you guys, but going in, I thought, I'm going to try to not hate this. And then
I remember when General Hill first started talking about this movie. It's probably about 2008 or 9. And I said, please don't ever make that movie.
Yeah.
I was like,
there's no way it
would
be good.
Make it.
And it was.
There's no way it should have been good. And then it's brilliant.
It really changed. As far as I'm concerned, it really changed everybody's view of Channing Tatum completely.
Yes.
I mean, you have him in Step Up, and then you have him in stuff like The Vow and The Eagle, like, which is pretty standard fare for somebody with pecs and a six-pack like that. And even G.I. Joe, you know, he's very likable, very charismatic, but, you know, you can see him in that role. But he comes in here and just makes, like, my favorite part of the movie is when they try the drug that they do. And they go on their little thing, and he runs into the band room, and he starts playing all the instruments, jumping around.
He's hilarious.
Yeah, and there's an extended scene on the Blu-ray that he literally does that for, like, 5 minutes, and and for somebody like that to not take themselves seriously and still actually be funny, and then you have all the little awesome things about it, like you mentioned Johnny Depp, you know, coming back there, and probably one of the biggest holy crap moments of the year, I would say, that people might not remember, because I didn't know
it was him. I won't ruin who he was, but I didn't know it was him till the end. Just a great movie, a lot of fun. The reason movies were made in the first place, to entertain.
I think we can probably all agree that nobody had a better year than Channing Tatum this year. Especially when you look at what his 2011 was. John, you and I have talked about this before. His 2011 was crap. It was bad. It was not good. And to come out with, what is it, 5 movies this year that are, at least in my opinion, all solid, 3 or 4 $100 million grossing movies, and basically establishing himself as one of the most bankable actors in Hollywood.
And the sexiest man alive.
And now he's about to be a father, so lucky him. What a year. It's a great year for Channing Tatum. I'll be curious to see how his 2013 is. I know he's got the Wachowski sci-fi film coming up next year, but interesting stuff. Good stuff from him. All right, my next film is Zero Dark Thirty. I know we're not supposed to be talking about it, but we're going to talk about it anyway because I don't really care. Zero Dark Thirty, I think, is one of the most important movies in a long time. And Kathryn Bigelow, at this point, has established herself as a director who only makes important movies. She makes big movies. I can't see her coming back and making a romantic comedy with Katherine Heigl next year. I don't think she can do that. Zero Dark Thirty, I think, is about kind of the loss of innocence of this country. The first half of the movie is so disturbing and uncomfortable, especially those first few minutes where you see the lengths we're willing to go in our war on terror. And then the movie takes this really important shift in the middle of it that where you can see kind of the changing of the guard, the regime change, and the way we have to start using our brains rather than our brawn to get the job done. I love that aspect of the movie and how subtle it is. I love the way she does it. Jessica Chastain is absolutely fantastic here. Talk about somebody else who had a great year. She's won. She's had a great few years. You're right. Curious to see her in this horror movie she's got coming up. But right now, Zero Dark Thirty, I think it's a fantastic movie. It is my number 2.
And, you know, I'll say real quick, I was saying earlier, we were talking about our disappointing moments later in the show. My most disappointing was not making the morning screening, not taking off work for the morning screening of this because I haven't seen it yet. But I did
Steel
Team 6, and I think – no, I'm not even going to make fun. Steel Team 6 was a fun movie. Steel Team 6 was the movie that you'd expect Hollywood –
so you actually watched that?
You actually
watched Steel Team 6. Okay.
I sat down and watched it the other night. It's the movie you'd expect Hollywood to make. It's got Cam Gigonet and from the OC.
That's it. I'm not watching it.
And Exhibit plays one of the SEALs in it. It's a good enough movie. You can watch it for 2 hours. And
is it better than Act of Valor?
Yes.
I didn't mind Act of Valor. I thought Act of Valor was fine.
I could stand Act of Valor.
I liked Act of Valor. I cried.
I can't talk about everybody.
I cried too, but probably not for the same reasons you did.
I don't talk about the military, but the funny thing is everybody was talking about the use of the real SEALs in Act of Valor, not to get off on a tangent here, but when I watched it, I really didn't see what they were talking about because they didn't sound like actors, but the thing is they're supposed to be showing the real SEALs, and believe it or not, every person I've ever I've got quite a few good friends that are lifers in the Army and stuff like that, and that's how they talk. I mean, they talk like they're reading of a script because everything's very, straightforward like that. So I didn't think Act of Valor was as bad as people gave it credit for. I actually really liked it. But
I liked it, too.
It's good, too.
Is it your number one movie?
No, the reason I'm saying that
okay.
is that
all right, that's all I need to know. All right,
moving on. Extra points is because anybody could have made the movie SEAL Team 6, but Zero Dark Thirty, from what I'm hearing, is a world apart.
Yeah. Now, what's next up for you?
I am going to go with Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Ooh,
a movie that I thought was so assured. I can't believe that the director is only in his 20s and that it's his first major feature film. And with an exquisite performance by a 6-year-old girl and a whole cast of amateurs. I thought it transcended its individual story into a piece of folklore and myth that was so resonant, so evocative, so beautifully made, gorgeous music. I just thought that was a wonderful film.
Indeed. I was actually kind of disappointed at the lack of award stuff I'm hearing for it. I know it is getting some mention, but, especially Dwight Henry. I thought he was just amazing.
He was the one that really got me, was his performance.
He's tremendous. Never acted before.
Yeah,
the Maker.
Yeah. Yeah, he worked as a baker, and they just his charisma got them to hire him for the job, and he wouldn't even look for the job, and he pulls it off like any Oscar winning actor has ever pulled it off before him, and he's not even getting mentioned, and it bothers me. But Beasts of the Southern Wild is an amazing movie. That's a great pick.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And also, the director wrote the score for for the movie, which I think is kind of interesting because he's done a little bit of everything. He's done editing and directing and and writing the scores for things, and so go him. Ben Zeitlin, I think is his name.
Yeah. Ben Zeitlin. Yep. Yeah.
Zeitlin.
Yeah. I just have to say a Washington thing, which is that his parents are folklorists and they met at the Smithsonian's annual folklore festival, and I think that's adorable.
Oh, that is adorable.
That seems like a job I'd want to do. A folklorist. How do you get that job? Awesome.
Leslie, what's next for you?
Well, I can just say, if we were all on TV, I could say what she said and point at Nell, because Beasts of the Southern Wild is mine as well. I could switch it for something else, but I feel as intensely about that movie as Nell does. I thought it was beautiful, heartbreaking and painful to watch, and beautiful and just mythical, and it's going to stand the test of time. It's just this really beautiful, and I don't like slice of life movies, so I love the fact that it didn't really feel like that to me. Like it had an arc, it had a story, and so you're not sort of floating out with them, and literally, you're not just sitting there experiencing, a few days. You're actually having an experience and going through a story, and yet it still feels like time stands still. I mean, that's the kind of quality that the movie has. It's just so beautiful to look at, and I too am really very, I'm looking forward to seeing what else the director is going to do, because I feel like, I was watching it very carefully to see, is this just going to be, he's going to do a bunch of movies like this, because then he just will, they're beautiful, but I want to see directors like him doing, huge movies, because I want them to bring their aesthetic to these movies. So I'm really hoping that he winds up getting a lot of scripts coming his way.
Yeah, and you mentioned one of the coolest things about the movie that I often forget, and that's a testament to the movie, is the mythical nature of it. I mean, the performances in this movie are so great, you forget that there's giant warthogs running at some point, whether it's imagination or whatever. But there is that mythical side to it that is
they're
so
not real?
Organically put into the. I don't know. I didn't want to. I honestly, and that's one of the cool things is that. Unless I miss something, it never really says, is it in her imagination, are they in another world, or what's going on exactly, and it's just done how it's done, but when things are done so well, you can accept, you don't need $10 million CGI, if everything is done well around it, you can accept that there's a 12-foot tall warthog looking at a little girl.
He's Ben Zeitlin, depending on how his career goes, I'm seeing him as sort of like, the cinematic cousin of Neil Blomkamp. I'm hoping that he keeps making movies that are socially relevant, that have a message, have something to say, and does it, without having to break the bank every time he makes a movie. I'm hoping that's the kind of director he becomes from here on out.
I also love the fact that that the lead actress, the little girl, Kvanjane, I think is her name.
Kvanjane, yeah.
Yeah, that character is, the whole story is so beautifully, the way that it's written, where they capture the way someone like her, who, is living in a really difficult situation, she has this really beautiful way of kind of having magical realism around her life, where she's living in a very blunt existence, very kind of stark. So the way that they blend those together visually in the movie, I really loved.
I agree with you completely, Leslie, and I think that was really one of Ben Zeitlin's great insights. The play that he adapted was about a 13-year-old boy, and he said, if I'm going to give this movie that magical, fable-like glow, it's got to be through the eyes of somebody who's young enough to have that sort of wavering sense of reality and fantasy, and that's why he'd made the main character, and then he met her and saw that she would be perfect for the part, so they rejiggered the whole thing around her so that she could play the role, and we believe through her eyes because we know that children see the world that way.
Right.
Yep. I can't wait for the sequel. I hope they make sequels. Just kidding. I don't want to see a sequel to that. John, what's next movie for you?
Next
Revenge
movie
of the Horrocks.
Now, Land of the Hobbits is number two for me. No,
yeah, right.
We were making fun.
Were they able to release that movie finally?
It's still on it's on a restraining order, which I've never heard for a movie. They couldn't get an injunction. Well, I guess it's still an injunction, but they got something weird to hold it back because
we talked about it when we saw that on
what
the DVD.
What movie is under an injunction?
It's called Land of the Hobbits. It's a movie that
goodness.
It's one of
the ones that do Transmorphers and instead of Battleship, it was American Warship.
I see.
Like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We talked about it on our show, and we were like, there's no way this movie can actually come out, right? I mean, it's one thing to make Transmorphers or, Thor, the God of Thunder, but to make a Hobbit movie? Like, that just seems like there had to be some sort of copyright or something, and it turned out there was.
Yeah, if Motorola is paying George Lucas for every time they say droid on the TV, then there's no way that's going to be legal. not Age of the Hobbits. It was not my number two. I have always been a huge James Bond fan since I can remember. It's one of those movies that really got me into liking movies, whether it be the silliest or the most serious or the most violent of them. They're all have their own charm to me. So I was a little bit skeptical when Travis came to me and said that it was the best Bond movie yet, and it was at the top, if not the very best. And I sat down to watch this movie, and damn sure enough, like you always expect the movies to not be that great, but I mean it was great in the sense that it fits today's world better, today's viewer better, I should say, where you don't have the silliness that people would be cynical about, but you still have a little bit of humor that. It's relatable today. It's not past dated like a lot of the Pierce Brosnan movies were in the later end. But
I don't
want to
hear
you
knocking Pierce Brosnan.
No, I love Pierce Brosnan and GoldenEye.
Okay,
I actually like those movies. I like The Invisible Aston Martin, but I'm going to like anything that just comes out James Bond. But that's why it's so surprising that I say this is hands down the best, if not one of the top two Bond movies of all time, because they've really managed to take this more serious, more natural, real world that they created with Casino Royale, we won't say Die Another Day, or Quantum of Solace. Yeah, I mixed that one up. But they managed to do that, and then
Die Another Day is not very good either.
Yeah, but by some amazing feat of screenwriting and cinema magic, they tie it in with the Bond we've known the whole time. So you get the sense of familiarity with the sense of newness at the same time, and it was a perfect balance of everything, not to mention how gorgeous the movie was. I mean, just the scene in Shanghai alone could get my vote for that. But Skyfall is my number two.
Good choice.
And then you've got the whole Xavier Bardem thing, because he was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really.
He was a lot of fun. I didn't
talk about him because I didn't like his performance. It's because literally I get creeped out when I talk about his performance because all I can see is taking those dentures out. Javier Bardem is one of the weirdest actors in the business, where he can go in something like Vicky Cristina Barcelona and be lusted after by women across the planet, and then he can go in No Country for Old Men and
us all.
yeah, seventh graders have his haircut, and you don't want to be in the same room as him. And he does it, and in this one, he's actually like a dichotomy of both. Like he's the blonde eyebrows and everything, that was a little weird, but he's somewhat suave and charismatic, and then completely creepy at the same time. He was amazing. I can't sleep with the lights off if I talk about him.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to get to my number one movie, which everyone already knows what it is anyway, so I don't even know why I feel like I need to talk
movie
about
loves.
It. But yeah, the Oogie Loves, the movie that the publicist begged me to interview somebody about, and I still said no. but before I get to my number one movie, our fellow Punch Drunk critic Julian Lytle is on our chat room, and he just gave us his top three, which are Moonrise Kingdom, Skyfall, and The Dark Knight Rises. So those are his top three movies of 2012. Very nice picks.
For remembering The Dark, I mean, I kind of feel bad for The Dark Knight Rises because The Dark Knight got so much hype, and then
feel bad for that $1 billion gross.
Well,
movie.
No, I don't when I think about it like that. But it's getting left out of a lot of stuff, and I think unfairly because it's got more serious competition, and it doesn't have the performance of Heath Ledger that really set Dark Knight apart. But it is a movie worthy of a top list. So I'm glad he remembered to put that in there because a lot of people are forgetting.
I should be muting my microphone right now because the Vikings have just eliminated my Bears from making the playoffs. Okay. And I want to scream. I'm going to scream, but I'm not going
to. At what point do you think it was a good idea to watch that while you're doing this?
I have to look at it. It's over my shoulder. I can't help but see it, and there it is. And
Dubbears.
I'm gonna keep it in. But
movie that'll make you happy.
I feel like I've talked about it enough already. My number one movie, of course, is Rust and Bone. A movie I've talked about so much. Of course it is. I feel like this movie just. Yeah, from director Jacques Audiard, who gave us A Prophet a couple of years ago, and The Beat Skipped My Heart a few years ago. I feel like this movie is just totally without sentiment, totally unconventional. A romance is not truly a romance. It's ugly sometimes. It's bloody. It's dark, but it's also really uplifting at the same time. There are a couple of scenes in this movie that I've said before have just been burned into my memory. Most of them with Marion Cotillard in them, of course, and I don't want to spoil them because they're so good. But this movie affected me in a way that few movies have. It's so deeply emotional. Cotillard, I think, is better in this than she was in Levy and Rose. And Matthias Schoenaerts, I think he's going to be like the next Tom Hardy. The guy is just ferocious on screen. I absolutely adore this movie from beginning to end. So Rust and Bone is my number one. If you want to know how impactful this movie was, just think that it made Katy Perry's Firework relevant. It made that movie. It made that song. That song nearly drove me to tears in this movie. That's how effective it is.
You know, I never put two and two together, but now I can laugh at you because you cried about a Katy Perry song.
I'll be honest when a movie drives me to tears. This is one movie that actually, it's rare that it happens. But there are a couple of times this movie where it actually did. So
hey, if I got emasculated yesterday for saying I had a couple theory factories and during Les Miserables, I can get you on this one.
Well, that's different because Les Miserables is
oh whatever
wussy film. So yeah, you deserve it. But this movie's a powerful, hard hitting film where that movie's not. So hey, we talked about it enough yesterday. You won't argue about
it. Yes, no,
now.
Indeed.
But
now, what do you have for number one or two or three?
For number one, I am going to go kind of old school and say Zero Dark Thirty because that movie just blew me away. It's a masterpiece, and that's all I can say about it.
You just blew my mind. You went old school with something that hasn't come out yet. So we went all the way around.
That's true. And yet I've seen it. And it is eligible for awards this year, and I just there's nothing else that could have been in my number one spot.
Oh, she's actually picking a number one.
Yeah, well, I had to do that because, you know, I had to vote in a bunch of critics' polls, and so I had to pick a number.
Oh, you got Leslie out in the cold on that one. You guys were both doing that. We don't have numbers for our rankings, and now you have a number one. So it's all on you, Leslie.
Well, that's just because I was forced to vote, but in the ranking that I published, I didn't have any kind of numbers assigned to them.
Yeah.
And again, I will say that I haven't seen Zero Dark Thirty. I haven't seen The Master. I haven't seen Life of Pi, and I have not seen Zero Dark Thirty. So those are three movies that are not on my top three because I haven't seen them. But so I will revisit this in my brain after I've seen those movies. But I am looking forward to seeing it. So because so many people that I respect and often agree with have put it at the top of their list as well. Mm-hmm. So.
So what's your number one?
Mine, I'm going to say Lincoln.
Yeah, good choice.
I'm saying Lincoln because the script is amazing. I mean, there's just Tony Kushner is definitely going to win. I mean, I'm just saying, I believe that he is going to win best an Oscar for that. And, you know, if you're watching it and listening, and all, you know, I think Daniel Day-Lewis just totally embodied a very interesting and complicated character that he, you know, he really brought Lincoln to life in a way that I think most people weren't even, you know, we know it's Daniel Day-Lewis, of course, he's going to spend 6 months being Lincoln and all of that when he's sitting at the, you know, because he was in Richmond, he's like sitting at the, on the, on a park bench and he's Lincoln. He's having dinner and he's Lincoln. So, I mean, he definitely embodied it and he was amazing. But I think the mixture of him along with David Strathairn and Tommy Lee Jones, who I both I think both were amazing supporting actors, and the script, I'm giving it to them. There were some, it's funny, it's got some action to it. It's a little long, especially for people who don't care about historical stuff, so it's not for everybody, but I just think it was a really beautiful movie, and I was bowled over by Daniel Day-Lewis and by David and Tommy, so I'm going with that.
Definitely a good pick there. I'm sorry, I'm lost now because I just thought of the funniest story that had to have happened when he was researching that role, because he is a method actor and they do, you know, get in costume and live it out. And like you said, he was in Richmond studying it. Anybody that's been around here for more than a season knows that they have the Civil War reenactments all up and down the East Coast. I wonder if he was ever sitting on a park bench while one of those was going on around him. Like, how awkward would that be for them? Because it's Daniel Day-Lewis, it might as well be Lincoln himself.
I wonder if he wrestled any bears.
I heard he chopped down a cherry tree and killed some vampires, too.
Mm.
No, but yeah, no. Lincoln is one of those movies where Daniel Day-Lewis is an actor that I don't want to hate him by any means necessary, but I almost want to be skeptical of movies he's in because he's so good that you almost would think that he just gets. Everybody's going to say the movie's good just because he's in it, regardless of the quality of the actual movie. But I think it's because he knows how to pick movies along with how to act in them. And it really is a phenomenal movie that that should be probably getting talked about a little bit more during award season.
Well, he picks challenging roles, and that's really all he seems to be seeking right now is chances to stretch himself, which I admire having an actor out there who does that, because not every actor does. But he's one of those guys who seems to look for challenges, and I appreciate that. So
he's the only major actor I can think of that's never done a paycheck movie that I can recall.
I had to look back on that. I don't know.
Look away, honey. You will not find it.
I don't think. I want to think about it though. I guess I can't really think of one. I guess I can't really think of one off the top of my head that he's done. So you're probably
he might have done a bad movie at some point, but the thing I'm sure he never did was just phone it in. He doesn't seem
he'll never phone it in.
And that is the prime qualification for paycheck movies.
He'll do a Brett Ratner movie next, then we'll revisit this topic.
Well, yeah, Rush Hour 4. Did you hear about that? my number one movie is an amazing feat of cinema. I mean, it's they say you can't catch lightning. I don't know how they say it. You can't catch lightning in a bottle twice or something like that. It's like catching lightning in a bottle.
Three, I'm cutting off your mic.
Well, it hasn't come out yet, so it has to be
the Expendables 2, I'm cutting off your mic.
No, but you know, the stars aligned, and you're probably gonna laugh when I say what it is. But if you think about it, it's true. So many things have to go right, and so many things have to fall in place, and so many things have to be available. The Avengers has to be number one.
Absolutely right. Love that movie. I think that's an excellent choice.
Yeah, you're not going to get any complaints from us. It's a great movie.
No. And plus, you know, I love my superheroes.
And I love my Robert Downey Jr.
I love my Joss Whedon. I love my Joss Whedon.
Love my Mark Ruffalo. Love the whole movie.
I love my Scarlett Johansson in spandex.
Yeah.
there was literally nothing. Even Jeremy Renner's kind of smaller role as Hawkeye that we didn't see as much as we liked. There's still nothing you could have really picked apart about it. And I don't know that there are any real legitimate complaints about the movie. But you know, you guys mentioned Joss Whedon, and that is really the icing on the cake to put it at number one for me. Because you have all these movies, all these actors that weren't as well known or as big, that their movies hit huge, brought these comic characters that weren't that popular, like Iron Man, into the stratosphere, and then you top it all off with the perfect person to write a movie of this sort, and what you have everybody seen is the Avengers.
Hey, great pick, man. I totally agree. All right, so that's everybody's top three movies. I love everybody's picks. You guys are always so smart with this sort of thing. I love having you guys on to talk about this stuff. But let's move on, because I want to hear what movies weren't so great to you. Just one, like your most disappointing, and what you think is the worst movie of the year, because these are two very different things. Like, I have a movie that's disappointing that isn't the worst of the movie of the year, but it was just so upsetting to me to see how bad it was. So for my most disappointing movie of the year, I kind of agonized over this for a little while. There were more picks than I wish there had been, but I'm gonna go with Taken 2.
Yep.
As my most
favorite
movie. I'm going to go with that. There were some other movies I could have picked. I almost picked Damsels in Distress. There were some things I could have picked, but I'm going to go with Taken 2 because it's such a massive drop off from the first movie. It fails on just about every single level.
Well, it's the same movie.
I disagree with that. If it was the same movie, I would probably think it was okay. But it doesn't work on an action movie level. It's about 45 minutes in before we get any actual action. And then by the time it actually does happen, it's really not all that inspired. It's just a really kind of dull and flat performance by everybody involved, and that includes Liam Neeson, who, you know, he fought hard to not actually make this movie, and it looked like it in every single scene. He looked like he didn't want to be there. So Taken 2 is just such a disappointing film to me. So that's my pick. But my pick for the worst movie of the year, I was telling John about this yesterday. I complained to the publicist, which I never do. I never complain to the publicist after a screening. But I complained this time because they saved the worst movie of the year for the final screening of the year, which was Parental Guidance. Parental Guidance, I said that it looked like it came out of a wormhole from like 1987. It just looked old. The jokes were stale. It was Billy Crystal doing that same shtick he's been doing for 30 years. I didn't laugh once. I talked about the scene yesterday where he gets hit in the nuts and then he projectile vomits on somebody. That summed up the entire movie in a nutshell right there. You didn't have to see anything else of the movie. If you just walked in and saw that, you could walk right back out. It is just so bad. Bette Midler looks like she walked in from vaudeville or something. She's over the top in every single scene. I don't know what was going on. It was like the director, who I can't remember his name at the moment, but it's like he was mandated to just stick the camera right up Billy Crystal and Bette Midler's noses and just stay there. Like that's all he wanted to do. Just stay there on them, stay right in their faces the whole time, and that was his mandate. This movie fails in every way imaginable. That is Parental Guidance. No one should ever go see it. But
you're not
according to $200. But according to the box office, people went to go see it. So, what can you do? So that's my worst film of the year. I'm done. I'm not talking about that movie anymore. Sorry.
But there are so many other things wrong with it that we need to explore.
Yeah, there are. I could talk about how disappointing it was to see Marissa Tomei in there, but I'm not going to do that either. I'll just let it go. And Bailey Madison, who I think is a great child actress, and she's just kind
of
wasting.
She gave the best performance in the movie. I was particularly offended by the treatment of the boy with a stutter, which I thought was truly, truly, truly offensive.
Yes.
And poor taste. Yeah.
Oh, and poor Tony Hawk. I mean, Tony Hawk.
Oh.
Tony Hawk. I mean, he's already
wiping
old.
Wiping out on a kid's pee.
Too. And he gets the indignity of slipping on some pee. It's just.
Now that is classic comedy, people.
Somebody apparently thought so. I know somebody else wrote it, but this one had the stink of Billy Crystal all over it. Like he just
he produced it. Yeah.
And it looked like he came up with the story too. I mean, it was just.
It's funny because when he came up with the story, he actually quoted himself from The Princess Bride because they're like, Billy, do you think this will work? And he was like, it'll take a miracle. That was a bad one. I'm sorry. Let's move on from that.
Now, what was your most disappointing movie?
I just want to say I agree with you about Parental Guidance, and between Parental Guidance, The Guilt Trip, and This Is 40, this has been a bad week for my people. Bad week
really
for the Jews. Okay. I'm going to say that my biggest disappointment was unquestionably this year because it was an author I like, it was stars that I like, it was a director that I love, and it was a big honking failure, and that was John Carter.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
It was terrible. Terrible disappointment.
Silent. I am silent over here in my tiny hovel of my sci-fi world.
It was awful. Okay.
It's
and then,
a mess. It's a mess. I'll give it that. But
Okay. It's a mess. All right. How the Finding Nemo guy could have directed that is beyond me. And Lynn Collins, who's one of my favorite actresses, was just totally wasted in it. Very big. Not some enjoyable moments, but I had such high hopes for it, and it was very disappointing. And then in terms of of the bad movies this year, I felt that in all the movies that were on my bad list, they all had one thing in common, which was a total misunderstanding of how incredibly unappealing their characters were. And so obviously, as I said on my website, any year that Adam Sandler makes a movie, everyone else is playing for second when it comes to bad movies. But I think that This Is 40, in my opinion, was the worst movie of the year because it expected us to feel warmth and affection and sympathy for characters who were so selfish, so superficial, so self-obsessed,
and
that
annoying.
We were literally looking up their asses. Literally.
Yeah.
There was a colonoscopy in that movie.
Yeah, we talked about
thank
it.
You
talked
now.
About
that is exactly
yesterday, and
what I was
that's
saying.
Almost exactly what we were talking about was that it was so hard to feel anything for these people's problems.
Talk about white people's problems.
Uh-huh.
I was embarrassed to be a human being watching this movie.
I'm sitting there thinking, you know, with my 10-year-old car that's needed a paint job for about 7 of those 10 years.
Yeah.
And my eighth of a tank of gas in there, and I see this guy talking about, oh, I don't have any money, driving his BMW down the road.
And in the first 5 minutes of the movie, she's upset that he took Viagra, and she's not thinking about him at all. It's about whether she is hot enough. If you can't learn what it is to be really hot by the time you're 40, you know, get over yourself. And also, you know, he's supposed to be eating cupcakes all the time. Trust me, Paul Rudd has not eaten a cupcake in his life. They were so mean to each other. They were so unlikable. And yet, because it's Judd Apatow's real wife and real children, I can't believe we got a screener from the studio recommending those two girls for Best Supporting Actress nominations. Are you kidding me?
This was the studio making Judd.
Can I just also say how long it was?
Yeah.
It's
you can. Please
long.
Say it again.
So
people know it is.
It's still going on.
Well, look, like we said, if Judd Apatow...
They were 50 by the time the movie was over.
If Judd Apatow ever gets a divorce, we're going to know about it in his next movie. But he'll still have Leslie Mann in it, and he'll still write her as the most vain shrew in the world.
And we're supposed to love her. It would be one thing if
it.
That was what she was playing, but we're supposed to love her.
Yeah. Yep. And now let me tell you just what because I might not get a chance to say this again, because we won't be talking about This Is 40. I can't imagine for years to come. I thought it was so hilarious that in Knocked Up, Paul Rudd's character Pete says exactly what my review for this movie was that. It's like an episode of Everybody Loves Raymond, but it's not funny and it lasts forever. That's it. When he's talking about marriage, like, and I was like, wow, that is so amazing that you said that because you just prophesized your own film.
They should have put that on the one sheets for this movie.
Yeah.
Leslie, what's up for you?
Okay, so I would say I will preface my biggest disappointment with the fact that I read this book and thought it was awesome. I actually didn't read it. I listened to it, and it was so great as a book on CD. And my husband and I were driving really far, and we listened to the whole book, and it was so much fun. And it seemed like it was going to be completely ridiculous. But it was very kind of inspired and fun to listen to and inventive. So I was really excited about Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter coming out.
Aww.
And it had these really good actors in it. So I thought... I mean, you know, I was a little dubious about the director, but even so, I thought, you know, these actors are really good, so maybe it's going to actually be good, you know, because they hired some really good actors. And I felt so sorry for them. Within about 10 minutes of that movie, I thought, oh, dear God, did someone not watch this? Like, before they put it out into the movie theaters, nobody said, oh, dear, wait. No one, there's absolutely no reality at all in this movie. And the whole reason why the book worked was they took a completely ridiculous premise and then steeped it in a whole, all these ways of making it seem like it could actually be true. You know, and then you take it and you turn it into this, like, hyper-action, you know, Hong Kong thriller thing, and it's just a disaster area. I was upset when I walked out of that movie because I had told people, it's going to be awesome. I was like, oh, dear goddess. I'm going to have to just go back to my friends and tell them, avoid this movie like the plague.
Leslie, I think you actually get some awards for that presentation right there about it, because that is the best reveal of a title I think we've ever had. The build up and then just
perfect.
Throwing out that was pretty awesome. I'll give it to you. And also you get the award for the probably one of the most unlikely awards if you had told somebody 10 years ago that you would be receiving this, and that's the only person to have Lincoln as the best and worst movie of the year.
Right. How about that?
I would have never seen that happening a couple years ago.
So in fairness, I had to actually make it the worst movie, even though it, you know, it was fun in a few ways, but I was so pissed off when I walked into that movie. I have to make it, it's a little bit personal, I'm not saying that Alex Cross and That's My Boy don't come right up close, but they didn't have me, like, telling people that, really, I know that the title's stupid, but you gotta trust me, it's a really cool idea, and it's gonna be cool, it's gonna be good, and then it just, like, yeah. Oh, you people, how dare you? Why did you make me such a liar? So there, you get them on both. It's the worst and the biggest disappointment.
Worst and disappointment. Wow, the doubleheader for that one. John, what's your disappointing movie?
As one that has not had any lack of conversation about it in the last 5 minutes here, my most disappointing movie, and there were a lot of contenders, was This Is 40. I mean, I literally spent the entire movie waiting for the punchline of whatever joke he was trying to tell. And they were apparently too. Travis and I were talking yesterday about it, and they had pauses in the script where they were waiting for like a canned laughter, like a sitcom, and they're like looking at each other. I'm like, really? And I was just so disappointed in Paul Rudd. He's not even trying. Doesn't seem doing the same thing. And I even mentioned yesterday on our show we were talking about that the movie. Like Judd Apatow is completely scared of making something that might not be funny, so he's just reusing old things, like the funniest scene in Knocked Up, when Pete was in the hotel on acid. Okay, well, let's put him in another hotel, and he'll put a starfish down his pants, and we'll call it a day. This is a movie that I really had high hopes for. I'm not sure why, in retrospect, but I did, and I got nothing.
Apatow really needs to go and do something totally different. I mean, and I'm not just saying make another comedy like The 40-Year-Old Virgin. He needs to go do something that is totally unexpected.
Because if he thinks he's like a Woody Allen of comedy, you know, like of sort of bad taste, comedy of bad taste, but he's that Woody Allen, he's dreaming.
He's not there yet.
He's making a very similar movie over and over again, and not in the way that Woody Allen could achieve success and do that.
I don't want to follow
Judd Apatow. Woody Allen, he's getting his head checked.
I really don't.
I don't really like
it. It's not that interesting to me. I don't want to keep following it for the rest of his life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just not that interesting to me.
Yeah.
What's your worst movie of the year, John?
My worst movie is actually Tie, and I know Nell and I have locked horns on this one earlier in the year. Battleship is tied in my mind.
I loved it. I'm sorry. I did.
I
liked it enough.
Honestly, I didn't have any expectations, and the first 10 minutes was hilarious. I had my hopes up, and then I was just like what? Uh-huh. It didn't jive with me. I know there's a lot of people that liked it. I wasn't one of them. It didn't jive with me on certain things. Our wavelengths were off, and it was laughable. The only cool thing I could say about it was the aliens, which really didn't really get too much screen time. Their design looked cool, but that sucked too because it made you know how good a Halo movie would look because it looked very similar to that. But I honestly, that was on my list the entire time, and I pulled last second audible and put Chernobyl Diaries as my worst movie of the year. You know, found footage is an easy target to pick on for worst.
Really?
Movie of the year.
Chernobyl Diaries?
Yeah.
Really? I'm actually surprised by that. But then again, I remember you and I disagreeing on that movie. I thought it was actually pretty good, but you, which is weird because you're the horror guy.
Yeah, usually it would be opposite. Like this is something that I would like. But I think they had a chance to do something really super cool here because it is found footage, and you know, it's like Chronicle did with the superhero stuff. But you know, that whole area of Chernobyl and surrounding it is not very much touched on in movies, especially for the creep factor of that it's still there in the exact same way it was. And yeah, it served some you know creepy set pieces, but it was just there was like zero logic put into it at all, and I haven't been that just ready to be done with the movie since I think Awesome Movie or Disaster Movie, one of the movies that's so original has movie in its title. I don't know, but yeah, Chernobyl Diaries sucked.
Okay, all right, so we're coming down to the end of the wire here, but I want to hear everybody's one performance, the one surprising performance to you, not your favorite performance, but the one that was kind of unexpected for you, maybe as a an actor who's doing something totally different you've never seen them do, kind of the breakthrough performance for you. For me, that performance was Mary Elizabeth Winstead in Smashed. I really love her in this movie. I compared it kind of to A Woman Under the Influence, and then maybe that's a little going overboard, but I thought she was fantastic here. We're so used to seeing her play the perky and chirpy kind of girl, like in Scott Pilgrim and Death Proof and movies like that, but she really comes into her own here with a very complex performance, a very tough performance as an alcoholic trying to overcome her addiction. I see good things happening for her in the future just based on this performance. So she gets my pick for breakthrough role. Does anybody else like her in this movie?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I think there's so many breakthrough roles this year that it's hard to narrow it down. But I think you do have a nail in a head on that one.
And plus, she's been in a couple of other movies as well, and shown her her range,
including Abraham Lincoln Vampires.
Yes, exactly. Well, I didn't say there weren't some good performances. They were trying valiantly. Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird year for her. I mean, there was Abraham Lincoln. She had The Thing late last year, which is just horrible. And then she comes out with this, and she's just totally.
I'm a huge fan. I've been
surprise.
A fan of her since Sky High.
Sky
where
High.
She was fantastic.
Oh, I love that movie.
I love that movie, and she was fabulous in it. And she was great in Grindhouse. She wasn't on screen long enough, but she was great in Live Free or Die Hard. I think she's a super actress, and I thought she was amazing in Smashed.
What you got now? What's yours?
Well, this is going to be a shock. So hold on, okay? Because I'm going to speak about my favorite actor, a man who has won 2 Academy Awards. But to me, he showed me a side of him that even I did not know he had, and he is my favorite actor, and that is Denzel Washington. I love him. I will go see him in anything. I think he's just the greatest guy who's on screen today. But one thing is that he's always been a little bit reserved. You know, he doesn't do love scenes, and he always holds a little bit back, I think, and that has worked for him in a lot of his roles. But in Flight, he opened up in a way that I've never seen him do before. He put on some weight. He let himself be very vulnerable on screen. He let himself be a mess, and I just thought it was a transcendent performance. It just blew me away.
I think Flight isn't getting talked about as much as maybe it should for his performance. I know people are kind of polar on it, but I didn't think the movie was that great, mostly because it was frustrating me. But he did show, Denzel Washington is a name that's synonymous with Hollywood in this generation. I mean, that he is movie star, and to see a side of him after 25 years in film that you haven't seen before, and I'm just fully realizing it right now after you brought it up, is that you never get to see him be completely vulnerable and totally helpless at the same time. And he's always got some kind of quality that makes it, even if it's fake, like in Training Day or something like that,
right,
where he's got the bravado. His bravado in here was just it was sad, it was pathetic, and that's a good call.
Thank you,
Leslie.
Very nice. Okay, so mine is a little odd, but I am going to say I'm kind of torn between, because I didn't love Lawless altogether, but I thought that Jason Clarke was great, and he played one of the Bondurant boys, and there was a level of subtlety in his performance. I wish I had seen him more in the movie, and I believe he should be in a lot more movies and do a lot more. He's going to be in The Great Gatsby, and I'm excited to see more from him because I thought that he was great. And he raised that movie significantly by his presence in it. And I think that I was kind of, you know, because there's Tom Hardy and, you know, and Jessica Chastain, who both are very magnetic to look at, and yet when I was watching them together, all I could look at was him because he just vibrated this character. He was just amazing. I just thought he was great.
You're absolutely right. He's a fantastic actor. I get to interview him at Comic-Con. He's a sweetheart, too.
Very underrated, and I'm hoping for more and more from that boy.
Yeah, that's a great pick. I mean, and Lawless is one that I think was overlooked by a lot of people this year, but his performance certainly, I know I overlooked it in, the first time I saw it. But, you know, it's a movie that, that really shows, among many other things, that how you are as kids is how you are throughout life. You know, things are established, that's where it's done. And he pulls off the middle child thing so perfectly undertoned. And, like, you know, you got Shia LaBeouf who's acting out the whole time. You have Hardy who's commanding everything, and then he's there because he knows he should say the right thing, but it's not his place. And he's, you know, he's the dutiful middle child, and he does it perfectly. So
that's and a walking
well,
train wreck.
He's yeah. He's also he was the one that I thought who really
so
stood out to me in Zero Dark Thirty.
He was the one that did it for me.
Yeah, I know you haven't
oh,
seen it yet, but
he's
if you like
that.
Him,
oh, so yeah. I'm gonna be excited.
He's
right.
gonna
he's
knock
that.
Your socks off
yeah,
in there.
Is,
oh,
you're
yeah.
gonna swear that he's American.
In fact, if you want to hear him, here you go.
Can I be honest with you? I am bad news. I'm not your friend. I'm not going to help you. I'm going to break you.
Here's your boy right
news.
There.
Oh, that Lammy. I just want to give him a big fat kiss.
He's bad news, but I have bad news. Next year he will be in the Roland Emmerich movie White House Down with the aforementioned Channing Tatum.
He is in White House Down, yes he is. But
which I don't understand how
I mean it'll be terrible.
Secret Service agent is tasked with saving the life of the U.S. president after the White House is overtaken by a paramilitary group. Travis, correct me if I'm wrong, this was the plot for Bad Dudes, the video game?
Well, look, the problem is that there are two movies that are coming out at the exact same time with the exact same plot. There's White House Down, which is the one you just talked about, and then there's Olympus Has Fallen, which is literally the exact same plot, except it's directed by Antoine Fuqua, and it stars Gerard
Uh-oh.
Butler. So,
Steel Team 6.
And they were kind of racing neck and neck to see which one would get finished first.
Wow. Gerard Butler, by the way, has had a very bad year.
He has had a very bad year.
Yes.
And I don't know.
He owes us one.
Yeah, it actually takes a little bit of quality. Not, I don't want to say quality, but it takes a little something in your movie for people to mention at the end of the year, because you could have a movie like Playing for Keeps that people just plumb forgot about. And, you know, should be up there with that stuff, but people would rather not remember they saw it. So, yeah, he had a bad year.
That Mavericks movie, too, is terrible.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm not really on his team anyway.
Okay.
Can't really get on top of his team. I just don't think he's that. I mean, he's okay.
He's okay.
He's cute.
There was a time where I really liked
Dear Frankie. He was so nice in Dear Frankie.
Oh God.
He's still got something left in him. You'll
see
more from him, I'm sure. And he does have a charisma that he shows. You know, in more than just like 300. P.S. I Love You. His little role in that was very good.
He was good in it, but I hated that movie.
Yeah, no, I mean, the movie wasn't very good, but you can see little bits of him that could be translated into something big, but he's one of those guys that needs a better agent or manager or something like that, because he obviously can't pick the scripts very well. Travis threw me a loop again. He told me we could have more than one breakout, so I had to pick my one breakout in the last second there. But I think it's my solid choice. As I always do, I want to mention all my other ones anyway real quick. Aubrey Plaza, Mark Duplass, and Channing Tatum all – were breakouts for me this year. Channing Tatum, as we talked about
Mark
earlier,
Duplass.
Showing a whole other side. Mark Duplass,
Mark Duplass is an awesome pick, and I feel bad that I didn't pick him now, and I wish I had.
He was an awesome pick.
Awesome year. Mm. Awesome year.
He was so good in Your Sister's Sister. He was so good in Darling Companion. He was good in everything.
He
makes a small appearance in Zero Dark Thirty. He produced a movie called Black Rock, which I saw at Sundance, a horror movie that comes out in a couple months. And he's amazing on The League every single week on FX.
You know, I always forget that's him on there, believe it or not. and then Safety Not Guaranteed was one of the movies that was on the outside of my top five of the year. Aubrey Plaza in with him. I that was my first introduction to her, really, that I can remember. And I've seen her. Yeah,
and
I saw her.
Scott Pilgrim?
What's that?
You didn't like her in Scott Pilgrim?
I did, but like I said, this is the first movie I noticed her in, and I was wow, I want to see more of what she does. And you know, in 10 years, she had kind of a muted role, but she's still like a person I'd like to see on screen. Channing Tatum obviously showing that he is more than a slab of meat. But my real breakthrough performance goes to Bradley Cooper for Silver Linings Playbook. The way he shows mental disturbance, whatever you want to call it. The way he really puts it out there, and it feels so real. And you know, I a lot of people are touched by this, and they can see. But I've got some familiarity with the situations that he's in and stuff like that. And he really nails it. He doesn't. And it's one of those roles, like almost like Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man. I know that's going to be a stretch, but where if you take it one step, one inch, one toe the wrong way, it crosses into funny. But you keep it right where you need to be, and it's over the top, right where it needs to be. And I thought he was amazing that, and really, especially coming off The Hangover. I know he did stuff like Limitless and some other films that I can't think of off the top of my head right now. That you know, he showed a dramatic side, but this was really
Hit and Run. He was in
Hit and Run.
That's
what
should be on everybody's
worst list.
Yeah, he is now Bradley Cooper. For anybody that's in the local, I'm pretty sure a graduate of it, and at least a student of Georgetown University. So the dude is handsome, talented, and apparently very smart. So another reason that we can all hate him. There you go.
And
I have been watching him since Kitchen Confidential and Alias, so I knew he was going to be big.
If you get a chance, if you haven't seen his interview on Inside the Actors Studio.
Mm. Oh, cool. No.
He cries through the whole thing. And I don't mean cries. I mean he sobs, boo-hoo-hoo sobs through the whole thing. It is so
and
touching and so sweet and so wonderful. It's fantastic.
One of my friends pulled up something because they knew that I was a big fan of his and thought he was a really good actor. And she's like, oh, he speaks French fluently. No, come on. And she pulls up the computer and shows me him speaking fluently. Go you. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's got laser vision, too. Like not corrective surgery, like Superman laser eyes. Because the dude can do anything.
Leaps tall buildings with a single bound.
You know, I mean, that whole movie was really a shocker for me. You know, Jennifer Lawrence, too. I know I wasn't in The Winner's Bone. I'm the only one. I felt so stupid when I said to Travis, well, we haven't really seen her in anything dramatic yet. And he was like, oh, Winter's Bone. But, I think Bradley Cooper was just amazing at that. A lot of people would be surprised, especially those who only know him from The Hangover, would be surprised to see what he could do.
Yeah, and he gets to work with her again, with Jennifer Lawrence again for his next movie. Was it Sienna? I can't remember her name.
Serena?
I can't remember. It's
Samsonite.
North Carolina.
I was way off.
North Carolina. No.
Serena. It's called Serena.
There you go. Thank you. So he gets to work with her again, lucky dude, lucky bastard. So good for him. Okay, so I think that's everybody's list. Now, I wanted to ask you a quick question before we let you go, since we have you on here. What was your – how would you rate this year in terms of family movies, that's really kind of your purview in a sense. How would you rate this year in terms of family movies? Would you say it was a strong year?
I'd say it was a very, very strong year for family movies, primarily because over the last 5 years or so, we've seen this incredible boom in animation. Mm-hmm. And we saw very little in live action for families this year. We had things like Wimpy Kid, not much. But in terms of animation, it was a glorious year. I was not expecting much from Madagascar 3. I was not a big fan of the first two, but Madagascar 3 was written by Noah Baumbach, for goodness sake, and it rocked. It was really good. And I will tell you, I completely loved Brave. To me, it spoke to me as a female in a way that I have never seen in an animated film before, about the relationship between the girl and her mother. It was not about a girl who was trying to fall in love and waiting for a prince or anything like that. I thought that was fabulous. I loved Frankenweenie. I loved Paranorman. And I loved so much that came out this year. Wreck-It Ralph, was crazy about Wreck-It Ralph. And so I just think it was been extremely, so a better year for kids' movies, as long as you're talking about animation, than for adults. And I hope we get more live-action movies for kids. But in the meantime, I'm thrilled with these animated films.
When's the next time we're going to have a live-action, like, iconic classic, instant classic movie like Goonies or any one of like six movies we had in the 80s. I don't remember the last really huge iconic kid.
I'm afraid that Oz the Great and Powerful is going to be maybe too old.
What about Super 8? Does that not count?
No, it doesn't.
It's a little dark.
No, I'd say middle school enough for Super, but I'm talking about something for fourth graders. We really have not had any live act other than Wimpy Kid. I really had nothing to put on my list. I mean, not even a My Dog Skip or one of those Walden movies,
uh-huh.
The Winter's tail, or, you know, like a dolphin tail, or
yeah,
really,
we didn't even get like a
like
we didn't even get like a Narnia movie or anything like that.
So I'm hoping we do better with that next year.
Yeah, my favorite family
really...
film of this year was Project X. That was my favorite family movie of the year. I absolutely adored it.
It really
had all
how
sorts
the family
of...
unit can get through a major event together in the end. You know what I mean?
Well, what I was going to say about what Nell was talking about is the fact that maybe part of the reason why so much animation is coming out and so little live action is there's been so much experimentation and expansion and you know, advancement in animation in so many ways that it's allowed for a really, you know, they really can make a movie that is very, you know, filled out and has strong story, strong visuals, and they can achieve a lot more in animation in a lot of different ways visually than they've ever been able to do before.
There's
so
no question about it. But also for a long time it was Disney and nobody else. And then Pixar mm-hmm. came along and then DreamWorks and then Sony and people else, you know, other people started getting into it.
Hard
and game. Yeah, and so, you know, God bless them. I think that's just the you know, one of the great, great advances in movies is that animation. Now, you notice I'm not mentioning the Rise of the League of the Guardians or whatever it was. Or,
Rise
you know,
of the Guardians.
There were the Rise of the Guardians. There were a lot of movies that I was not that crazy about this year. Hotel Transylvania was okay. But the ones that were strong, I would put up against, you know, classic animation that as good as it gets.
Brave, for sure. Absolutely.
It's actually, it's a really good sign, too, if you look at it from, you know, the business standpoint of Hollywood. We're so used to them sacrificing quality over the bottom line. And you know, something like a Diary of a Wimpy Kid, You shoot in a 2 months, you don't pay anybody that much, you don't have any stunts, you know, you're good. Quick in out the door, you make just as much money as you would with like a Frankenweenie, or it may, you know, probably even more with a lot in a lot of the cases. But they're putting the time and money into the better movies, which hopefully they'll get wind of that in the rest of the genres.
But they put a ton of money into Mars Needs Moms, and it was one of the biggest flops of all time. So, you know, thank God. The, you know, if you're lucky, the quality of the story is there, because at the end of the day, the story is really what matters.
Julian just reminded me of The Secret World of Arrietty, which is a movie that
yes,
I like
which is
a
beautiful
lot as well.
Film. That's on my. I have a top 10 for families, and that's on there, too.
Awesome. Well, ladies, this has been a lot of fun, as it always is. I'm so happy that you both could join us. It's been great.
Really a pleasure and a blast,
yeah.
To say the very least. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was.
It's a great pleasure. It's an honor to be included. I love talking to all three of you, and I will come back anytime you say.
Nell, tell everybody where they can find your stuff before you go.
It's easy. MovieMom.com.
That is easy. Wow. There you go, MovieMom.com. Leslie, the same for you. Where can everybody find you at?
Well, I am I'm on a bunch of patches all over the place, but I'm also at cinemasiren.com, and then we do interviews and stuff on artinsightsmagazine.com.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, ladies. We're going
to
have you guys back on again.
Well, thank you for having me, too. I look forward to seeing you at the next preview.
Oh,
thank you guys, all three. Okay.
Thanks, your squad, baby.
Thank you. I can't wait for that.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Wonderful year sharing the movies with you, and I look forward to next year very much.
Indeed.
Me too.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Great.
Bye.
Bye.
I don't think we've ever had a bad top show.
No, never. Never,
I really honestly don't. I mean, that was, you know, of course, everybody's always going to think, oh, well, people always say, oh, that was a lot of fun. But, genuinely, I don't think I've ever said that and not meant it. That was a blast.
We have so many talented people in this area. I've said it before. I think DC has some of the most talented critics in the country. We don't get the recognition for it that we deserve. But I think DC has some of the smartest and funniest and most insightful critics. And we're fortunate enough to be friends with a lot of them, and we can get them on the show. To talk and stuff like that. So
I let everybody in on a little secret about critics around this area is we are, as a group, I can even say there are very few, if any, that are the fake kind of critics that everybody hates that you get everywhere else, where everybody just kind of goes in with the flow. Everybody has, and you can tell when they talk about stuff, because everybody might like the same movie, but they'll give you a unique reason, each single person, that's well thought out and thought through. And, you know, I almost want to thank a little bit of people overlooking us in the West Coast and plus stuff like that, because, you know, allowed us to become that way. So Not a sermon, just a thought.
All right. As everybody knows, we're going to be we're not going to be doing these on a weekly basis for a little while. I'm going to be starting my own show starting next week called Cinema Royale. And we've talked about it before. We're going to try and figure out something because I want to keep these shows going on as frequently as possible. So we're going to figure out a way to do that.
Travis is going solo, so we're going to get somebody that sounds kind of like him for the reunion tour, but not exactly like him to sit in. His name will be Bradis.
I'll be like the guy under the mask who's not really the guy under the mask in pro wrestling. They pull that trick all the time. But no, I'll be doing my own thing starting next week. And I think we're going to come up with something. I'm going to send you something soon, actually, John, because I want to find a way to keep doing these as frequently as possible. If not weekly, then maybe every 2 weeks. So we're going
to
figure out
something.
Whatever
we can do to make that happen, we will make that happen. Because it's just too much of a blast to not do. Where can I don't even think I know this shit. If you have a site to host your stuff or anything like that, like where can we find you next week?
Cinema Royale is here on Blog Talk Radio. It will air Sunday nights, at the same time that we do the show, because I have such a small window of times that I can pick from. But yeah, it'll be on Blog Talk Radio next week, Cinema Royale, and we're gonna have an interview that we're also gonna have on Punch Drunk Critics soon. Interview with Marlon Wayans next week, talking about a haunted house, and we're gonna have WAFCA President Tim Gordon joining me for the first opening couple segments for the show. And my goal basically is to have a different critic with me every single week to talk movies for a little while. So that's going to be my thing. I want to get as many of our friends out there and get them the exposure they deserve and give them a chance to get their opinions out there. So that's what I want to do with my show. And of course, have fun. It's going to be my music, my stupid sense of humor, and of course you're going to be there as well, because I expect you to be a frequent guest as well, because I can't. How can I leave my Punch Drunk Critic pal out of the loop for too long?
I don't think it's necessary for us to say that we wish you the best and good luck on all of this, because if you keep doing what you've been doing, it's going to be a great show. Not just you, but like we said earlier, all the critics around this area, they deserve their own time on air to be heard, because there is so much great talent in this area to talk about movies. It's really great what you're going to be doing. It's gonna work out perfectly, and everybody should tune into that next Sunday at 7:00.
Well, I appreciate that, and we'll come up with something for this show that we're going to do as well, because you and I have a good thing going here, so we're going to keep that going as best we can.
No doubt.
But anyway, it is almost time for the Redskins and the Cowboys to start, if it hasn't started already. So we got to get the hell out of here.
We are out of here. So for the last weekly regular season show, I screwed up on the last. God damn it! I always do that.
God damn it!
All right, man.
Hey, where are the white women at?
I had to do it that time. That was me. We'll catch y'all later.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
I'm not great at farewell, so that'll do, pig.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.